what we should look at it as is like, what a cool opportunity. If your child is going to mimic what you do so closely,
totally.
How cool is that? Because they're going to freaking do exactly what you do on the good side too. So the model that we've had up to this point, we call this the three M's. We as parents model a bad relationship with our phones. One day we give our kids a phone and they mimic what we've modeled. And then we do something absolutely crazy with the third M. When they mimic what we've modeled, we get mad at them for mimicking what we've modeled. And it's insane. But if you model a relationship that you want your kids to mimic, then all of a sudden you make magic and make memories than any other cool M you can think of. But it is going to begin with you doing that. So that's why the physicality of putting your phone physically distant from you, that's really, really important.
Hey guys, my name is Shayla. Welcome to the Hey Shayla podcast. I went from full-time travel to full-time new COVID mom, and now I'm a mom of two. And holy wow, is motherhood and adulting a learning curve? There are so many decisions we need to make and a million ways to do it right. I created this podcast to interview some of my gurus to share their knowledge and empower you on your journey. Let me be your guinea pig and ask the question you think everyone else knows. Here, we're a little hippie. We try to do things as naturally as possible. We're open-minded and we don't take ourselves too seriously. But above all, we support one another and work to find what works. If you're into it, you're our people. Let's get started. Hey guys, welcome back to the Hey Shayla podcast. Today I am interviewing Joey Odom, who is the co-founder of Aro. Aro to me is so fascinating because it is creating a way to help you change your habit with your phone. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about what it is. And then the whole episode, we talk about the relationships with our phones, the effects on our children, the guidance that we need to give to our children by example. It's such a good episode. But Aro, it's an Aro box, and it is a phone charger for up to 5 phones. And there's an app, and the app tracks the hours that it is in the box, the hours that your phone is physically away from your body, the hours that you're off your phone to create habits. You have streaks. So there'll be like, you've had a 4-day streak where you've put the phone in the box for at least whatever, for some amount of time. You can create your own goals. Like, I want to be off my phone for 5 hours a day. And then throughout the day, you can do that. And if you're away from your phone, they even have a setting where you can set your phone screen down and it will start tracking the time. I have not had mine very long and I love it. First thing in the morning, put it in the box. We do breakfast. We do getting ready for preschool or on the weekends, like without my phone. And it's just been such a fun thing because of the gamification. They totally gamified it to be like, all right, streaks. Okay. How many hours are you away from your phone? Okay. Good job for doing that. Okay. It's dinner time. Do you want to put your phone away? And it's just like putting your money where your mouth is. So you pay for a monthly subscription for the app. They send you the box. And I think that it's just such a powerful tool if you are really, truly interested in getting more face-to-face time with your friends and family and spending less time on your phone. So we are going to talk to Joey about all the things. Prior to co-founding Aro, he was an executive commercial real estate and realized that his phone was distracting him from the most important thing in his life, his family. And I feel like we all feel this way, but we don't like know what to do about it, or it's too hard to make the change. And so he goes through some very practical examples for what we can do. You can find more about the Aro box at heyshayla.com/Aro, A-R-O, or you can follow them on Instagram at GoAroNow. Let's get into this interview. Joey, I'm so excited that you have agreed to come on and chat with me about this. I have seen Aro and I've been interested in it, and now I have one and it has been an absolute game changer. But aside from that, I just want to hear so much. I feel like you've learned a ton about like screen time and phone time and all of this, and because you have a podcast, and I just want to soak up all the knowledge that you've gotten from them in a concise way for the listeners. So I appreciate so much that you made time to chat with me so that we can help get this message out to more people.
Well, thank you, Shayla. I can't promise concise. I can't promise that, but I can promise an outpouring of a lot of the things that I've learned, which are a lot. I've learned a bunch over the last few years and it's been a lot of fun. So thank you for having me on.
Yes, of course. So the first question that I always like to start is with you. I want to know how, like, the passion behind this, where this came from, the ideas, the like, when did this start? I want to know all of the background.
Yeah, sure. Well, I'll take you back about 10 years, close to 11 years now, on a typical Saturday afternoon where something absolutely magical happened. So my son Harrison, who is now almost 16 years old, was playing his first soccer season. And Harrison is, he's just the sweetest. He's always been just the sweetest boy. He's just such a good boy. And along with that, and many people who are sports parents will know this, that it's really the aggressive kids who thrive in youth soccer specifically.
I believe that.
It's not necessarily
the sweet ones.
The sweet boys are not racking up the goals. So that played out with Harrison. Oh, and so Harrison went out, and every team has a player like this who it's the last kid on the team to score a goal. Like everybody had scored a goal except for Harrison. And so this Saturday afternoon, we lug out the lawn chairs. My wife and I are sitting there on the sidelines with our daughter, who is 3 years old at the time. And this moment arises in the middle of the game where, and Jayla, I think on this picture almost like a movie. It feels like a movie in my memory, like very slow motion, like dramatic music in the background. Harrison rears back his leg. He kicks the ball and it rolls into the back of the net. He scores his first soccer goal, and everybody, this happens on all teams, when the last kid scores a goal, like the crowd goes wild, the coach goes and picks him up. It was this really amazing moment, and there was this little sliver of time before everything went nuts when he did what all five-year-old boys do, just instinctively flipped his head to the sidelines to lock eyes with me and to see the pride on my face, my smile, and just to know like, oh, dad's here with me. I'm glad dad saw it, which was pure magic, except when he looked at the sidelines, all he saw was the top of my head because I was looking down at my phone.
Oh, is why this is like ingrained in your brain. Oh,
absolutely. This is that moment where I realized, you know, here I am. It's like everybody, like you plan for this family and you have all these great aspirations and, oh, what's it going to be like when I meet my, you know, we didn't find out what gender, like, is it going to be a boy or a girl? What's he or she going to be like? And then I go to a soccer game and just miss a moment like that. And it's one of those things where this is his first soccer goal. There's only one first soccer goal.
Oh man.
And I had a realization there, Shayla, that for all my good intentions, for all the great things I wanted to be, and for in ways, like a lot of the ways I thought I was great, I was still missing this because this relationship with this little, as silly as it sounds, this little thing in my pocket was getting in the way of all the things I said were most important to me, all the things I claim were most important to me. And as a result, the good thing is Harrison says he doesn't remember that.
Oh,
even though I tell the story.
You apologize every day.
Yeah, exactly. And so I just realized like something was wrong. I have a relationship with an object and it's getting in the way of the relationship with the boy I love most in the entire world.
Totally. And I feel like a lot of parents can relate, but they don't take it to heart, right? Like a lot of people know deep down that there's an issue, that there's a habit, that there's an addiction, I feel like is not a stretch of the word, but they don't like, you know what I mean? They just don't, when they don't think about it or do much about it.
I know exactly what you mean. And I think there are a couple reasons for that. One of them is we do have this sense that this is brand new. Let's not forget, like we're 16 years into the iPhone. This is a brand new technology. And as a result, it's just come on so strong. In a way, we just have just grown this certain level of resignation. We've just said like, this is how it is. This is this, you know, we need them. And so as a result, like, they're going to get in the way of things. They're going to break things. And which I do understand why people have that like acceptance, but there's a difference between acceptance of something and then resignation to its effects. And so I think that we've kind of like grown a little bit too resigned. And then the other thing is the answer is super simple. Like the answer to this is super simple. What's the answer that day? Leave your phone in the car when you go to soccer games. Okay. That's the answer. And if I did that, all the other potential distractions from my phones are completely eliminated. And that's available to us every day. It's just, we don't do it. And so it's like anything in our lives. It's like exercise is a pretty good example. We know that we can burn calories for free. We can build muscle for free. You just run around your neighborhood and you do some push-ups and like you do that for free. All of us have gym memberships. And the reason is because we know how valuable it is to exercise. We also know that there are some impediments in the way of it. And so by joining a gym, you remove a lot of those impediments. You have the equipment available. Sometimes you have programming available, depending on what it is. You have accountability. You have a designated place you go. So you're removing the friction of doing a bunch of difficult things that you know are valuable. And I just don't think we're, because it's so new, we have not yet prioritized this to such a high level where we're willing to say, I'm going to do whatever it takes to make sure I get this right because the end result is so important.
Totally. Oof, that's true. And I feel like even just hearing you say, I should have left my phone in the car that day, I'm like, ugh. In the car, like just put it in your pocket, right? So like that was my response in my head. I was like, what if there's an emergency? What if you want to take a picture? What if there, like, and all of these things that it's like, you could, but also I have probably, 10,000 photos on my phone.
Yeah, right.
How often am I going through them? Not often. And in my mind, I'm like, right, but when they're like 16, I'm going to love going through 10,000 photos. Probably not. Probably not, right? I need like
right, exactly.
Not that many. And I just, I think like the fear too of just like something's going to happen and I'm not going to be able to get a contact. And I don't know how valid that is. I don't know.
Yeah. So
there is a lot of strange attachment.
Yeah. So, no, I know what you mean. That what you just mentioned is a very valid thing. And this is especially true. And I don't want to be too overly stereotypical, but this is true for moms. Like moms connect things. That's one of the brilliance of moms, is that moms understand that all things are connected in life. Right. And so they are, as a result of being of their minds connecting, which by the way, like the definition, this is the best definition I've heard of wisdom by a guy by the name of Andy Stanley. Andy says that wisdom is the recognition that all things in life are connected. And so moms have this like extraordinary wisdom because they see how everything connects. Now, the downside of that sometimes is moms can play out to the nth degree what could happen. So they're writing theoreticals everywhere they go, right? And so they're kind of like guessing what could happen. And so that unthinkable call could come in. It definitely could come in. We all know that it is a one in a million. And as a result of, you know, potentially we have that one in a million call that could come in. And I think that we're missing these one in a million moments with our families and our kids because we're waiting on the one in a million other thing that could possibly come up. So I think that for people who feel that way, like maybe for people who are expecting a lecture here or for people who are expecting condemnation, there's none of that here. Like understand that all of the feelings that people are feeling here around this, it makes perfect sense. This is brand new. We're trying to figure out how to navigate in this. And if we can elevate this to a level of importance where we're willing to set aside the potential for something catastrophic in exchange for the potential for something magical and awesome with our families and our kids, or even mundane, because that mundane's not that bad too. Like, that's where the real beauty of life is.
Yeah. Cause I think about all the time. I remember being so bored in my room and like the radio's playing and like a song comes on and I run to record it on my like, what are they even called? The tape player.
Yeah, sure.
So that I would like, I'd miss the first half, but I'd catch the second half of the song. And like, you just sit in your room and like, look at the ceiling fan and just, you were just bored.
Yeah, that's right.
Our kids don't understand that feeling. Mm. And we don't understand that feeling anymore. That's I get so uncomfortable. True. I'm like having to do taxes last night. I'm like, oh, this is so annoying. But before I start, and it's like 9 p.m., like I need to go to bed soon. So I need to just like hammer this out. Did I get an email in the past 5 minutes? No, I haven't. Okay. Well, maybe did I get a DM on Instagram? And then you're just like, are checking all these things. It's like, let's focus here. It's just nuts. It's crazy.
Absolutely. You're so right.
So I sent you questions and I started with the parents, but I switched it up. We're going to start with the effects on kids.
Yeah.
And you seem like an on the fly guy. So I feel like this will be all right for you. But so for you and I, we're in two different phases of life. I've got a 2-year-old, a 4-year-old, and another one on the way. You said 16 and 14?
Yes.
Okay. So your kids have grown up with the phones.
Yeah.
And mine will too. But I'm curious to know if you, like, what have you seen with them or their friends or the impact on their childhood or, I don't know, the effects on the kids?
Yeah, this is we're in an interesting spot because, you know, my generation of parents is one that we had no prior guidance. Like we had no discipling. We had no discipling. Like no one told us what to do. And so it's we are seeing I'm very encouraged by, you know, people of I rarely say I feel so old, but saying like your generation of parent, like I look like, oh, we're probably the same age. We're not. I'm older. I get
we're
it.
Like,
so, mid-40s parent is we've kind of been the ones that have stubbed our toes, and I'm really like feel very heartened that the next generation of parents is really seeing the effect and like, oh, okay, I don't want my kids. I don't like that piece of it. And this is, by the way, true with any technology. We kind of learn and adapt. And the difference with this is we had no predecessor, so we had no guidance. And so what I've seen with, I'll say specific to my kids, well, let me take holistically, like holistically as a society, like it is now well documented that teenagers right now, the rates of unhappiness, of suicidal ideation, of high, you know, spikes and high levels of anxiety, it is absolutely rampant. Like there's no question it's rampant. And it started about 15 years ago, 16 years ago, which coincides perfectly with the release of the iPhone. This is no indictment on the iPhone. I have one. I'm never getting rid of it. I love the iPhone. It's great. So let's just make that clear. So, but the problem is not necessarily, and there are a lot of contributing factors. So I don't want to be reductive here, but let's think about a teenager living today. A teenager is confronted with so many things on their phone, from bullying to, you know, body comparison, which teenage girls are particularly susceptible to, body comparison, bullying, even, you know, worse and worse stuff. And it's crippling them inside, as it does for all of us. Like comparison is the thief of joy. We know all of that. Like when your life is being compared, like for example, my kids this week are on spring break. They're the only ones of their kid or their friends who are not traveling. Like you got people in Spain and France and Greece and Barbados and all this like crazy, like elaborate spring break vacations. My daughter's watching dogs all week throughout the neighborhood and freaking raking it in. I'm so proud because she's a great little entrepreneur. But I say all of that, like, fortunately, they're not on social media to see that comparison, because that's really catastrophic. That's really devastating. But so all that said, like, that's a lot to confront. It's even more to confront when you don't have a foundational sense of value inside for teenagers who have grown up with parents who have looked at a screen instead of their eyes. That's something that is catastrophic to a foundational sense of value. So it makes it so much harder for them to then overcome and be resilient when it comes to those things they encounter on their phones. So holistically, it is very scary. We should be like very rightfully, justifiably concerned and scared about it. Not to cower in fear, but to say, oh, we can do something about it now. So that's one. Just kind of holistic. Go ahead.
Which would be what? What, not give them phones? Like, what would you say is the thing that we can do?
Well, and it's a huge piece of the discussion, which is we have to model it. It begins with us. It is us that have the power and the authority as parents to do that. Absolutely. Now, when it comes to how we introduce technology to them, that's, you know, for my kids both have iPhones. My kids both have, you know, neither of them have Safari access on their phones. They don't love it, but it's like, all right, because I know if I were a 16-year-old boy, I would have never slept if I had the internet.
Totally. Right?
There's nothing, like, why would you ever do that? You can get sucked in. My kids, we've introduced it to them because I do think it's very important to recognize this is something that's going to be part of their lives. This is going to be something that's part of their lives. And so the alternative approach, the complete abstinence approach, which I see a lot of great movements that I think we should really listen to, like Wait Until 8th and setting, like this guy named Jonathan Haidt, who has a new book coming out called The Anxious Generation. And he gives some guidelines for when kids should get phones, when kids should get social media. And it's like, they're very, very good guidelines. But if we go to a complete absence, we've heard some people say, I'm never getting my phone through high school, and good on you if that's the case. I believe that we have a real opportunity to teach them how to steward this well, for them to use it well. And yes, you're going to stub your toe, and yes, it's going to be challenging, but we as parents have to be vigilant in overseeing them. So I'm a big proponent at a younger age, practically, if you're going to pick them up in sports practices, it's probably not a bad idea to have one of like a Truemi watch or one of those, like have those little kids safe watches where you can reach them, but they can't scroll on them. Introduce them to a kid safe phone after that, then give them an iPhone at some point. The longer you can wait on introducing any of those, the iPhone and particularly social media, the better. There are a lot of comparisons to alcohol. With most things, it's good to expose kids to things at a young age and let them kind of build up like a tolerance to it. That's different with alcohol. It's different with pornography. It's different with your phones. The longer you push that off, and there are statistics, for instance, for alcohol that says for every year that you wait for your child to, I say child, adolescent, teenager, whatever it is, for every year that you wait, the percentage of them becoming an alcoholic goes down dramatically. So we wait in the same way. I think it's super wise to wait. Now, the challenge is, I'm kind of digressing here, but the challenge is, if your kid's the only one that's doing it, that's really hard. So you have to, as a parent, band together with a like-minded group of your parents, of your kid's parents, your kid's friends' parents.
Right.
Get 5, 10, 15, 20. I think you should probably start that around third or fourth grade, starting that discussion, not giving them, but starting the discussion on, hey, we're going to band together and we're going to introduce a watch here, a kid safe phone here, and then we're going to wait until eighth or ninth grade until an iPhone or something like that. So there's a big power in community in doing that. Now, with my kids, here's one thing that I don't think we give our kids enough credit for. We think our kids, oh, they're all on their phones and nothing you can do about it. I'm just telling you, our kids crave connection at all ages. They crave connection. So your 2-year-old and 4-year-old crave connection. My 14-year-old and 16-year-old crave connection. When their friends are over, they crave connection. My son and daughter both, when they have people over for sleepovers, they will ask me, hey, Dad, could you come in about 9 and ask all of my friends and me to put our phones in the RO box?
Oh, wow.
That's not hyperbole. They literally asked me to do that because they know what happens when you do that. Because if you're all sitting on a couch looking at your phone, that's not fun. They don't want to do that. It's comfortable, but it's not fun. So if you can remove that, they don't really have any withdrawals from it. They're usually really fine with it. And then they can have their good time. They connect and they can share experiences and all that kind of stuff. So I'm a firm believer in the fact, we can get into a little bit more, that it has to begin with us as parents, how we're modeling our relationship. It's giving our kids enough credit to understand that they do want to connect and they really don't necessarily want to be on their phones all the time. And then for us to just see the effects that can have, understand the downsides of it, but then understand like how much hope and how much opportunity is on the other side of it.
Okay, I have a few questions from this. So
yes, I told you I wouldn't give you concise, Shayla.
Yeah, no, this is great. I know, and I'm taking notes so I can remember the things to go back to. Okay, I'm for sure going to forget because pregnancy brain, but here we go. The first thing, this is just a statement. When I was like, okay, so what's the plan? We don't give them phones, easy peasy, right?
Yeah.
And you were like, no.
Yeah.
You. Mm-hmm. I was like, that's not the easy answer.
Dang it.
That's like the hardest answer. Yeah. And so that was a good thing to hear. It's like, no, you're teaching them that when you're with people, you talk to people, you make eye contact with people, you care about people, you put your phone away. You like, the phone is not a thing. Because when my 2-year-old brings my phone to me from the living room, and if I'm in the kitchen, here, Mom, here's your phone. I'm like, it's not my third arm. That's not, that is not a part of me. You feel like that's my, like an appendage.
Yeah.
I don't love that. I feel like that's like a big flag for me to be like, okay, this is, or when I'm on my phone now, she wants to be playing a game that I have on my phone. And I'm like, okay, no, we're all going to put our phones away. I see that you see me on my phone and now you want to be on the phone. Like, there's lots of like these indicators where you are clearly, it's, you're on it too much. And that modeling, woof.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all I have to say.
I mean, listen, we all, this is one of the biggest learnings that we've had in all this in the last 5 years, is it is universal. What you've just described, and if anybody is listening and can relate to that, like, don't receive any of that with any kind of condemnation or shame or anything like that. Everybody's doing it. That's okay. We're all in this. We all understand it. We all need our phones. That's not a bad thing. What we should look at it as is like, what a cool opportunity. If your child is going to mimic what you do so closely,
totally.
How cool is that? Because they're going to freaking do exactly what you do on the good side too. So the model that we've had up to this point, we call this the 3 M's. So the model that we have is we as parents model a bad relationship with our phones. One day we give our kids a phone and they mimic what we've modeled. And then we do something absolutely crazy with the third M. When they mimic what we've modeled, we get mad at them for mimicking what we've modeled. And it's insane. And then we, and then we mess up the relationship and all that kind of stuff. But on the other side, what I just said for you is, if you model a relationship that you want your kids to mimic, then all of a sudden you make magic and make memories than any other cool M you can think of. Like a lot of good things can come from that, but it is going to begin with you doing that. So that's why the physicality of putting your phone physically distant from you, that's really, really important. And the flip side of what you just mentioned, for your two-year-old is to say, you have an RO box, you can do this. You can go give it to your two-year-old and say, will you put mommy's phone in that box? Will you put mommy's phone in there? And so that will signal a couple things for your child. That'll do a couple things. One, it will signal to them, uh-oh, mommy's about to be with me. Mommy's about to be fully present. So it's going to be like a Pavlovian response for them to say like, mom's in. And then the second thing is three things. It's going to normalize the distance away from your phone. And then the third thing is it's going to build a muscle memory in them where it will not feel abnormal for them the day they get a phone to put their phone physically distant from them.
I love that.
So it's like, what a cool opportunity. The fact that you're already seeing your two-year-old is going to mimic what you model, like how amazing of an opportunity you have to turn that tide and to do it in a way that you want them to mimic.
Totally. And I feel like we're creating our adult best friends, right? 100%. We don't want to hang out with adult best friends who are sitting on their phones at dinner. We want to hang out with the ones that want to go hiking or the ones that want to go to have nice food and dinner and whatever. And like,
so true.
Yeah. So we need to do the things that we want to
do
so that they learn to love those things too.
Absolutely.
I love that. So what else did I, So you said that I guess I'm challenging this a little bit. So you said that you slowly integrate things like Safari, right? So that they know, maybe not Safari, but so that because it is the world that we live in. So you want them to kind of like understand it and get to know it and this.
Yeah.
I guess my question is elaborate on that a little bit because I feel like you and I didn't have the internet and we learned it and we figured it out and we did it slowly and whatever. Yeah. When they're going to have tons of other people who are like, oh, this is how you do it. And they could probably learn it pretty quickly.
Yeah.
So I'm curious what parts you're like kind of trying to integrate because it is the norm.
Yeah, that's a really good question. But I don't know if this is dad Joey talking. This is not expert Joey talking. I don't want my kids to feel like they're social outcasts.
Okay.
I don't want them to feel like that. Now, does that mean I acquiesce to everything they say their friends are doing? Absolutely not. But I do think that so here's an example. We moved to a different city. My daughter was going into seventh grade and I would have ordinarily not gotten her a phone at this time. However, she's going to meet new people. And so we said, we're going to get her a phone. And this is terrible of me. I hate that I did this. And I'm going to make sure that she has the blue text bubble, not the green text bubble. So I'm going to get her an iPhone because I understand that there is a social component of that. And it's so stupid. I get that. Everybody listening now thinks I'm just a total sheep. I get it.
No, they think that you're a real person who understands what the world that we're living in. Yeah.
And was it locked down? Absolutely. Do they have access to the internet? No, they don't. Did their phones never go in their rooms. Mm. They never sleep with their phones in their rooms overnight. And so I think the way we've also looked at this issue, Shayla, it's almost like it's such a binary approach. Like, well, you give them a phone or you don't. When you give them a phone, they have access to everything. They can sleep with their phone in the rooms. Absolutely. What are you talking about? No way. We need to teach them how to build a good relationship with this phone.
Totally.
And the good relationship with this phone is, no, you don't have access to social media. No, you don't have access, unfettered access to the internet or any access to the internet. No, you don't have. And by the way, if you do need that, here's my laptop and it's sitting on the kitchen counter and we can while we're here. So it is, I will, admittedly, I believe that my daughter she's done a really good job with it. I have actually full confidence in her relationship with her phone, which is all we're focused on is the relationship with the phone. There are other people who are doing great things.
Totally.
So what's that relationship with their phone? But she's not getting caught up in social media. She's not getting caught up in, certainly not on the internet. And so we've done that slowly. So you said this earlier, this message is a lot easier if we say smartphones are bad, flip phones are good, burn your smartphones, use a flip phone. That's a lot easier. It's a lot more clear at least, but I don't believe it captures the nuance and the opportunity that we all have here. So we think of it in some ways like the story of Sleeping Beauty, where the young princess, a prophecy was made over her that said that someday she's going to prick her finger on a spinning wheel. And so her parents got rid of every spinning wheel in the kingdom. They happened to overlook one in the basement that she found later. But the first time she encountered a spinning wheel, she pricked her finger on it because she had no idea how to use a spinning wheel. So she could have been the greatest spinning wheelstress in the entire kingdom. If her parents would have taught her from a very young age, she probably would have not pricked her finger on it. So I think, and this goes back to the question of when should I get my kid a phone?
Yeah.
you should get your kid a phone when you are ready, willing, and able to 5X your vigilance on discipling them and coming alongside them and showing them how to use things, because the responsibility falls on you to do this. I don't think you should ever get your kid a phone if you're just going to hand it to them and let them have unfettered access to the internet and all social media. I think that's a bad plan. But when you're ready to really go after it and you're ready to sit alongside them and you're ready to help them use it and put all the restrictions on it, all the stuff, and then slowly over time, like the, what's this, the, gosh, there's a social media app. It's like the, where you take, you know it because you're cooler than I am. There's a social media app where it's like you take a picture of yourself and then what you're in front of. It's like one time a day it pops up.
I know what you're talking about, but I don't know what it is.
So my daughter does have that. And so it's a fun thing. It's what her friends do. Am I checking it all the time? Yes. Are we looking at it all the time? Yes. Am I in half of her pictures? Yes. But it really is up to the parents to like enhance their vigilance. And so when giving your kid a phone, that I don't think ever means giving it to them with no restrictions or and restrictions. I don't even love that word. Giving it to them with no
guidance,
ongoing guidance. Yeah, exactly. Guidance and ongoing guidance.
I love that approach because I think there's a lot of pitfalls even with ourselves when we're like, okay, no, I'm gonna get rid of my phone. I'm gonna do this. I'm gonna delete Instagram. I'm gonna do this. And then like I've deleted Instagram. The more I talk about this, I really have a problem. But I have deleted Instagram on my phone. And then I'm like, wow, if I go on Safari, it's not as bad because the videos don't automatically play. And I'm telling my husband this and he's like, what? I was like, what? No, it's great. Cause then don't get sucked in because the videos don't. And he's like, I don't think I've ever gone to Instagram.com on Safari. And I was like, that's kind of a lot. He's like, yeah. So I feel like I love the approach of, okay, we're going to give this to you. You're still a child. You're not going to get just like free reign to all the things that you can get. And off of the phone, you're going to have restrictions of like where it's allowed, when you can use it. And like that makes the clear guidelines and I feel like creates the habits, which leads into the next one. So we as adults, I saw on your website, you kind of went back and forth between calling it habits and addiction. So I think you preferred habits instead of addiction, but how, I guess you kind of touched on this of just like when it came out, there were no guidelines. There were no people that were like, oh, this is going to be a bad thing. Like, I feel like this is the cigarette of our generation, right? It's like in retrospect, we're like, no, 5-year-olds got it when they first came out. This was great. Like my grandma's like, no, they were handing out cigarettes at the hospital. It was no big deal. And you're like, what? But in retrospect, you're like, now I know that that wasn't a great idea. So how, like what kind, I don't even know the right question to ask, but how did we get into these habits and like this addiction?
Yeah. I'm going to go back real quickly on one clarifying point on the last comment first. The reason why a lot of what I'm saying there feels nuanced and not like ABC is because our focus, as I mentioned, is on how can we help you build a good relationship with your phone. There are amazing organizations. There's one called Screen Sanity, for example, who has like a very, very good guidelines on when you should give your kid a phone. Here's what you should do. Like the step-by-step things on how to like very practically give your kids phones. That is not fully our focus. And I think people should listen to those. And I think there are so many people talking about this issue. It's really helpful to have complimentary groups like that who are doing that. Jonathan Haidt, for example, the Anxious Generation that's coming out, he gives very practical, here's when you should give your kids phones, here's when you should give them social media, wait until 8th is another one that gives good practical guidelines. So the reason why my feedback may not be quite as prescriptive is because we're looking at this through the lens of a relationship, which has a bunch of nuance, and which if you can kind of embrace the principle, and I'll give you some principles on how to change your relationship with your phone in a little bit, but that's probably why it feels a little bit gray, because it is gray. And there are some things, if we don't understand these principles, those guidelines will be meaningless. So to answer your question, we look at this, and you said habit versus addiction. And I think the language we use around this around our relationship with our phone. And again, this is speaking specifically to parents, just parents and how they use their phones and how they model their phone usage to their kids and how they interact with their relationships with their partners when it comes to phones. In us saying we're addicted, and I bet you've heard, but you probably hear it when I'll say this. When we talk to people, when people are talking about their phones, they'll say something like, kind of laugh, and they'll say, oh, I'm just so addicted to my phone.
I knew it. Yes. Yeah.
Right. I mean, that's how we say it. Like, oh, I'm so addicted to my phone. Oh, Mark, you know, it's not like we say that with anything else in our lives. Like, oh man, I'm just so addicted to porn. You know what
right.
I mean? Like, like you don't like,
or alcohol or yeah.
Like, oh, what an alcoholic I am. I'm so silly. So but we do with our phones. And I think there are two reasons. One of them is we don't necessarily see, we don't say that about alcohol, drugs, you know, any of that kind of sexual stuff, because it's, we know that's serious. We know there's some real devastating consequences of that. We've not fully embraced in our brains that there are devastating consequences to this, that this is the potential for the most destruction in our life, bar none. This has the potential for the most destruction in our life. And that's at worst. At best, this is the greatest source of distraction in our lives. So distraction is anything that gets the way of your intentions. You want to be a present, you want to be in an intimate present marriage. This is the greatest possible distraction from that. You want to be a parent that raises great kids and you're totally locked eyes with them. This is the greatest possible distraction for that. Mm-hmm. So when we say addiction, one, we're kind of brushing it off. We laugh at it, you know, like we're brushing off the severity of it. But the other thing we're doing is we're giving ourselves an excuse for our bad behavior. And this is not me preaching. I have been the worst at this. I told you that, you know, what other parent misses their kid's first soccer goal. I get it. So this is, I'm the worst here, or have been the worst in the past. So when we say addiction, we're giving ourselves a pass. And because when you say you're addicted to something, you do two things immediately. One, you admit you're totally powerless over the thing, right? That's the thing. I'm totally powerless over alcohol. Hmm. Two, you, let me go back to the powerlessness in doing that, like admitting your powerlessness over the thing, like alcoholics can't ever have it ever. Like that's the, like leading into the second, like you have to abstain from the thing forever. You're powerless. And then you completely abstain from the thing forever. Alcoholics can't have one drink a week. They can have zero drinks ever. So I'm not suggesting that when it comes to our phones. So in us calling it an addiction, instead, if you say this is a habit, instead of saying you're powerless, you say, no, I have agency. No, I have control over this. There's something I can do about this. And instead of saying I have to abstain from this, you're saying I can use this if I reprioritize it. I can, as long as I'm putting my human relationships in the way of my relationship with my phone, I can actually use this thing. It's a pretty amazing thing. So the words we use are important. So even if if people only get this out of it, instead of being resigned and saying you're addicted, how about just say, I have a set of bad habits, which means that I can do something about it. So I think that language is super, super important in how we talk about it.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I think that that's really important. All right, we're going to take a brief break to talk about non-toxic mattresses. Did you know that was a thing? I went down the non-toxic mattress rabbit hole, which is a gnarly place to be. I found Plush Beds, and I am a mega fan. I have had this since 2020. I bought a second one for the spare room. They're very comfortable, but it's adjustable. They never get returned because they're like, oh, it's too firm. We can make it a little softer because it comes in layers. And depending on how you order the layers, makes it softer or harder. And it's non-toxic. So if your babies are sleeping on your bed with you, like mine do, I feel real good about sleeping on this mattress. So I'm a super fan. I do not have a discount code for them, but they are always running sales. So if you go to heyshayla.com/plushbedspod, P-O-D, you will find it. And it's magical. Let's get back to the show. When you do start making the changes, it is very uncomfortable.
Yes.
Like when you are like, I think I saw this in your intro video, your co-founder, he said that he watched a Harry Potter video with his daughter. And she was like, that was the first time you've ever watched one. Right.
Yeah. Sadly, that was also me. I have all the war stories. Yeah. Gianna said she was 9 years old. We watched a movie. She turned to me at the end of this Harry Potter movie and she said she was not being judgmental. She was not being congratulatory. Either one. She just said, Daddy, that's the first time we watched a movie and you haven't had your phone, which in a way was a little bit of a gut punch, but it was also awesome because I thought I just did something great.
I did it. Yeah, totally.
I can't wait to do it again.
Yeah.
And again, when we talk about habits, when we've approached Aura's whole approach is around the habit loop. The habit loop begins with a cue, which leads to a routine, which leads to a reward. So the cue here is the app giving you a reminder to spend time away from your phone, or the visual cue of the box leads you to put your phone down, spend time physically distant, and then go do something on the other side of it. Spend some time with your kids, read a book, whatever it is, which crescendos in the reward. The reward through the app is a bunch of gamification and cool stuff like that, leaderboards, competition. That's great. But the real reward is what happens on the other side of your phone. So that moment when Gianna said that to me almost 5 years ago was such a reward that it felt so good that what did I want to do? I wanted to repeat that habit loop. I wanted it to keep going. What's great about that story is I told Gianna that I reminded her of that story about a month ago, and she kind of laughed. She goes, "Dad, that would be so weird if you had your phone during a movie now."
So oh my gosh, that's amazing.
And this is okay. And this is a guy, it's easy to hear that and be like, no, I don't believe that. I promise you, we have normalized in a short amount of time, 5 years, we've normalized in a short amount of time the fact that it's normal for Dad to be present. It's normal for me to, for her to be cuddled into my arm and us watching a movie together, sharing one experience. Are we talking? No, not all screens are bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, not even our phones. I would argue that our phone screens are not inherently bad. But when we can share a common experience with somebody else, even if it's watching a screen, is what we're doing. We do, you know, Snape voices and we do Dumbledore spells and all that, you know, all that stuff now. But we do that because we've shared a common experience without any distractions. So those types of things can be absolutely normalized. And the cool thing is, one, it's never too late. So it doesn't matter how old your kids are. You can begin this now. That's what's so great about it. But when your kids are young, like for you, Shayla, it's such a great opportunity because the stakes are high, but the pain right now is pretty low. If you wait a decade, the stakes will remain high, but the pain will be increasingly high. And so you can get it done right now. And this is what we've been shocked by. The people who are most receptive to RO are families with kids who don't have phones yet, who are getting ahead of it, who are saying, I know there's pain coming. Mm-hmm. I'd rather take a vitamin than a painkiller. So let me take my vitamins now. Let me get this right now. And so it's a much more seamless introduction to phones. And I think that's going back to my kids. I think that's why it's not been that challenging of a season giving them phones. That's why we don't have many fights. We just began with a good framework and a good relationship. And it gets not too late for anybody, but it's a heck of a lot easier when you start when your kids are younger.
Interesting. Oh, it's so good. And I love hearing that, like, your family is just have made the habit to not have it around and that's the norm, because I'm like, that's what I want. Because even just in having this RO box for, we haven't had it that long, but, and my like goal is 3 hours a day, because I'm like, okay, I need it on me for safety. Right. Yeah. That's like my big thing. Absolutely. Is like the safety thing. But then I learned, cause I'm like, well, at the park, I put it down and on my box. And then I got an email that's like, no, there's a feature. You can just flip it over and it starts tracking your time. And it is a gamification. I'm like, oh, I did 4 hours today or whatever. And obviously I'm on my phone less than that, but it's nice that I can be like, I'm driving off. And you just like keep, I don't know, tracking up the numbers. But like yesterday, I don't even think it was in the box, but I started just to create the habit of like putting it away. And we were outside all day and we were painting our bodies, because why would you paint paper? Mom, right. Can I paint my belly? I want to be a tiger. I was like, yeah, go for it, you wild child. But like, and on one Sunday morning, I think I did 4 hours at one time. And it was just like, my anxiety was way down. I like felt like their tantrums way down. We didn't watch any TV, which is something that I try to do also. I learned that, oh, if they take the magnet tiles out for them and put it on the floor, they play with them instead of me being like, go find something to do. Or like if I take the kinetic sand out, they play with it. And just I made dinner. Like there's so many things that like your phone gets in the way of. And to your point, like it's, the phone's not bad. It's just the good things that you're missing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. You're so right. And the things what's interesting is the things you don't know you're missing, even if whether it's time with your kids, time for yourself. Like how many times are we just grumpy? Or are we angry? And you know, what is it that anger is just sadness that has no place to go. Right. So anger is a secondary emotion, right? So it's not the primary thing. And so when was the last time any of us really took an inventory when we're feeling a little grumpy or something? And we just took an inventory of silence and just breathed a little bit. And we said, what is this? What's happening? And it may be a huge thing. It may be a small thing, but even just that even when I did that, I just felt calmer taking that little breath in, right? And so we have that opportunity available to us all the time. Or when we see our kids are angry, what a cool opportunity to apply a little bit of Dr. Becky Kennedy rules and just say, like, just explore, like, hey, what's going on? Mm-hmm. Is something wrong in your heart? And then you're helping them process through those things where they're not going to then someday just look towards their medication of their phone mm-hmm. and escape that feeling, escape that bad feeling. So it's, to your point, all those, it's such an amazing opportunity. I heard a story from a guy the other day. He said he went to his daughter's gymnastics practice. She's 6 years old, went to her gymnastics practice. He accidentally left his phone in the car. And so he said, okay, I'll just watch. He said that she turned and looked at him no fewer than 20 times during the gymnastics. And he'd never seen her look towards him before, which doesn't mean it wasn't happening. She'd been looking before, but up to that point, again, just like me, daughter had been seeing the top of his head because he's looking down the phone, his phone. So not only the things we know we're missing, but things that we don't know we're missing. Mm-hmm. What a freaking awesome opportunity all of us have. None of this is doom and gloom. None of this is hopeless. It's just like, what a cool thing we can do today, all of us. All these great things that you're describing, it's not this ethereal, out of this world concept. It can happen today for every one of us.
Right. Well, and you mentioned before, like, the phone is the thing that you can take out to make a better relationship with your partner. You can take out to make a better, or whatever, make guidelines. And the piece that I know you preach is you could take it out to make a better relationship with yourself. Like, like I said, the anxiety went down. And you're the second person on my podcast to do just what you did, that breath. She was like, she's like, sometimes I schedule an hour extra babysitter just so I can sit and do nothing. And I'm like, well, people don't always have that opportunity to be able to pay for an extra hour of babysitter to do nothing. And she's like, cool. Set a timer for 1 minute and breathe. And then she paused and she took a breath and she's like, I already feel better. And it's that, like, finding those little pockets and finding just the calm. And because when you're constantly consuming, when you said when you're getting angry, sometimes I'm trying to read something and my kids are like, wah, 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 and I'm like, well, I'm just trying to read this thing. And if I were to just like pause for a second, I'd be like, okay, I'm trying to read something that does not matter. You're hungry. Yeah. Okay. I'm really sorry. Like, I'm sorry I was getting irritated with you because I was doing something that doesn't really matter to me at all as much as like you and your hunger. So,
And it's so justifiable for you to say to them or say to your partner, like, to stop what you're doing, to look them in the eye and say, like, hey, mommy's reading something. I'm going to be done in about 3 minutes. Why don't you go play with the Magnaformers? And then I would love to give you a snack.
Yes.
That's a great opportunity for you to, it's not like it always has to come in front. It's not like we're going to raise little tyrants who can have our attention all the time. But I think that's a very reasonable thing to teach them, like, oh, I'm checking an email right now and I'd love to talk to you. But if their knee's bleeding and you don't know it's probably a decent time to put the thing down and read it later, right?
Totally.
So, but it does start with this pause. What it really starts with, and the term RO, it means to notice. It starts with a moment of notice. So how can we slow down for just a second and just notice that feeling inside of us? Notice what our child is really asking for. Notice what if our partner actually has had a hard day, oh, maybe it is time to put this thing down.
Totally.
So it does begin with this moment of notice, which I think we've lost this kind of ability to notice. And what a cool thing that we can do is regain that. And we can live a life of notice. I don't care if anybody orders an RO box today. What I do care is if somebody does walk away feeling inspired, hopeful, and know how to live a life of notice.
I love that. Yeah. I think just the biggest thing that I'm getting is guidelines for ourselves and for our family to guide our family. And I think you're right. We do because I think most of my listeners have younger children, obviously not all of them. And it is, you can get ahead of the curb to ahead of the curb. Don't jump the curb. Get ahead of the curb to teach our kids the relationship with their phones. And to your point, like, if I'm reading a recipe for dinner, like, obviously you need to wait a second. I have to read this recipe, but that's the notice part. Am I scrolling Instagram and annoyed that you're interrupting my scroll, or am I looking at a recipe and what do you need? Can you wait a minute? You have to go potty. That needs to happen now.
which, by the way, this is hard to do. And I think the fact that anybody who is listening to our voices right now, you're like 98% ahead of everybody else, because you clearly have intention to live your life well. Like, you clearly have good intentions for your lives. And so this is just like continuing to equip yourself towards that, and doing it in a way, not always relying on your willpower. I mean, the goal here is, how can you make your environment conducive to your intentions versus relying on your willpower? Environment eats willpower's lunch every single day of the week. So that's why we have a physical thing. We have a physical thing so that your environment is conducive to it. Because even putting your phone in front of you, I mean, studies are showing again and again that the presence of your phone equals usage of your phone, even if the screen's off, because you're anticipating from it what's happening in there, what's going on in there.
Totally.
Even when, in fact, we see there's a study by Dr. Maxie Heitmeier at the London School of Economics, which is fascinating, which says that silencing your notification will actually increase your phone use, because you don't know when something's happened.
Oh man.
So you're just like, oh, did something happen? Did something happen? Did something happen? So you keep picking it up more and more and more because your phone is on silent. Instead of, and he says, he further goes on to say, the only way to reduce your phone usage is for it to be out of sight and completely away from your body, which again, an acknowledgement we encourage, especially moms. Moms won't get comfortable doing that unless everybody they love is at home, right? Until your kids are at home and your spouse is at home, your partner's at home, completely makes sense that you would want your phone with 100%. You, because the school nurse could call, or your husband could, or your wife could call, or whatever. Like, there's a ton of things that could happen. When everybody's there, then you say, okay, I'm going to take the chance that my aunt's not going to call with something catastrophic over the next few. And those things happen also, and we get that, but that's why we also encourage just small little chunks too. It doesn't have to be three hours at a time. It can be, and it's great when it does, but it could be 3 minutes. It could be 30 minutes. But those little bursts, physically distanced from your phone, that's when the real stuff can happen.
And you're spot on. Because my husband works shift work, when he's home, I leave it in the Aero box overnight.
Yeah.
When he's not, ringers on, sleep silence is off.
Absolutely.
My phone is right next to me.
Yeah.
Because it's the fear. And for a while I was using an Apple Watch, which I really liked, because it would talk to my phone. So I could still get the calls. Mm-hmm. I could still get the text. I could send a text if I needed to. It was more cumbersome. So if it wasn't important, I did not do it. Yes. I wasn't scrolling. I was able to check the time. Like, I had everything that I needed to feel safe with my phone in the car, and I'm in the park, and it would still communicate.
Yes.
So that was a game changer. But
that's brilliant.
Right. But then I started thinking about EMFs, and I was like, oh, it's attached to my skin. And like, there's no good answer here. But I think the conveniences that our phone has brought is obviously phenomenal. I can order groceries and get them delivered to my house without ever leaving. I can make a doctor's appointment. I can call my sister, like the things that are. But then, and obviously this isn't, I think everything that we're saying is take what works, leave what doesn't. Like, if this doesn't work for your family or your lifestyle, that's fine. But try and find the nuggets in here that do. And I feel like, is it valuable for me to leave the house and teach my kids how to act in Target? Because I'm like, I just don't want to deal with that. That I'm sweating by the end of it. Like, they're running all over the place. I don't know if I forgot something. But like, my mom never had the option to order something online.
Yeah.
We had to go. Or like, we had to have a babysitter or my dad or whatever. Like, and we had to learn how to appropriately behave. So I feel like there's a lot of things that are convenient.
Yeah.
But at kind of at what cost, and not even catastrophic cost, but just even me, I should get out of the house. Like, what else am I going to do here for the next hour? I don't know. If I got out, it would eat up that hour. We would like, they would be stimulated by the lights and the things. Yeah. And they'd ask me for 100 things. And I'd learn how to say no. And like, there's a lot of lessons that can happen in that, instead of watch a show for 30 minutes. I'm going to order this online. It's going to get delivered in a little bit. Or let's hop in the car and they're going to throw it in the back of the car, and then we're going to come back home. And so I think kind of there's pieces of it where you can question, is this convenient, or do I want like a little bit slower of a lifestyle? And as a stay-at-home mom, it's a little bit easier, or work from home mom, because I've got more time, I think, but I don't know, just kind of like thinking about the conveniences that are coming and deciding if that's better.
Yeah. And it's, again, the last thing I would do is try to tell a mom what to do because they're one, a lot smarter. And then two, I've gotten my head bitten off many times by trying to do that. But it's just, it goes with, you know, there are days when, yeah, that makes sense. And there are days where it's Instacart day.
Totally.
And that's also just fine. Totally. It's also perfectly great. And there are days when it's, hey, listen, I need a little bit of me time, which I don't think, you know, I don't think moms give themselves enough of. I don't think they give themselves permission to have a little me time. And hey, you're going to sit and watch the iPad for a little bit. And I just need to breathe for a minute. And that's awesome also, you know what I mean? And
agreed.
So it just toggles. And it's easy for, I think it's easy for moms particularly to process messages like this, again, because their brains work so brilliantly, and think like, oh, I see all the ways I'm falling short. I hope that's not the feeling that people are getting from any of this conversation, because it really is like, oh, this is a really cool thing I can do. Like, mm-hmm. What an amazing thing that I can do. We know that everything runs through the household, runs through mom's phone. And I'm being overly stereotypical, but the household runs through mom's phone. So absolutely you need it. You should definitely, you're doing a great job of organizing play dates and getting groceries and looking up recipes and all that stuff. But you also, it's okay. It's also okay. You know, dads a lot of times put down their phones to connect. A lot of times moms pick up their phones to connect because you want to connect with the outside world. That's the means by which you connect the outside world. That's also great. Right. And so, but let's think about the ways you can kind of examine that relationship and then make some changes to the relationship. And again, we have a few different ways that you can begin to make those changes in a relationship to help you align your life with your intentions.
Yeah. And, yep. And it's not an all or nothing. Like, 100%. Like you said, it doesn't have to be 4 hours in the morning. It can be 5 minutes that you put it down and you did play Magna Tiles, or you sat down and ate breakfast with your kids. And like those 5-10 minutes are huge. They're massive. So even though they might see you on your phone, they're also getting that connection piece. And I love the nuancedness of your message. Just like, yeah, of course we want you to put your phone away, but also we know that there are needs for it too.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's so right.
No, you said that you have like 4.
Yeah.
Yes.
We, and again, because we're always looking for something practical. One is as we look through this lens, this is where I would encourage people to look through this lens as a relationship. And this is all we're focused on. We believe when you change your relationship with your phone, you change your relationship with everyone around you, including yourself. And so this relationship piece is important. So how do we begin to change the relationship with our phones? And we've identified 4 ways, and they are going to sound very simple. They're going to maybe even sound a little bit reductive, but I promise you these 4 things, you can implement them today. And I promise you, they'll change your life. Truly. If this is something that you feel a little bit of struggle with, these will change your life. And I'll back up before I jump into that. I do think it's important to hear a statement. Again, back to the shame piece, where it's easy for parents to kind of view these things like, this is where I'm falling short, or this is where I'm feeling a little bit of shame. I think we've all heard the line, mommy, watch me, daddy, watch me, mommy, put down your phone, daddy, put down your phone, grabbing our face to look at us. If you've heard that kind of feels crappy whenever you hear that. But I would encourage, if you hear that, or if you've heard that, to view that through a little bit of celebration, because that's a good thing. And I'll tell you why. It's a good thing for 2 reasons. One of them is your kid likes you. So it's a good thing that your kid likes you. And so if they're saying, put down your phone, what they're saying is like, I like you and I want you to spend time with me. So that's good. The second thing they're saying is, I'm valuable enough for you to look at me. Your child recognizes their own value enough to where they believe that they're worth your eyes being on them. And that's really good. We should get worried when our kids stop asking us to put down our phones because they're so used to us looking at our phones instead of us looking at them. So if you've heard that before, I just want to encourage you, that's a good thing. They like you and they like themselves, and that's a really good thing. So celebrate that. And then let's feed into that and let's let them know how valuable they are. Let's reinforce that. So that's a little aside going into the 4 ways to change your relationship with your phone. The first one goes back to a little bit of what we said, is just understand your power here. Understand that you have a huge amount of influence on the future for your child. And that goes through modeling what you want your child to mimic someday. Let's not get in the trap of this 3M trap, the model they mimic, you get mad at them for mimicking what you've modeled. We don't get in that trap. So the first one is understand how much power you have and that it begins with you. So if you have that foundation of understanding, that's going to make a big difference on what you do next. The second one is to start daily and small with time away, physically distant from your phone. And it has to be daily. It has to be a daily routine that you do. But I want to encourage you to do it small. Don't worry about a long amount of time to begin with. Just start small, but do it on a daily basis. You said it earlier. It could be 5 minutes. And that's actually where we tell people to start. It's like if I asked a trainer, like, hey, how much should I run a day? They would say, well, I don't know. Like, how much have you ever run? So you would start small. You'd walk for half a mile before you jog for half a mile before you'd walk for a run for a mile. So you would start wherever you are in the continuum. So we tell people to start with 5 minutes a day, 5 minutes physically distant from your phone. That sounds easy, but stats tell us that only 9% of people spend time away from their phones on a daily basis. So 91% of us have our phones with us 24 hours a day. So you're in the 9% club if you spend any amount of time away from your phone. So start for 5 minutes.
You're saying physically away. Because obviously distant, we spend 5 minutes off. You're saying physically distance yourself.
Because it's the accumulated duration. So it's the time away, the physical distance you're building up at that point. You're really just building up a muscle memory and gaining the comfort of spending time physically distant from your phone. So start with 5 minutes, let your next benchmark be 23 minutes. 23 minutes is important because it takes 23 minutes and 15 seconds to refocus after you've been distracted. Mm. So we're living a life of kind of continuous partial attention. So hit that 23-minute mark, knowing that you've been fully focused on something and it takes that amount of time to refocus after you've been distracted. And then your next one, jump up to an hour of time physically distant from your phone. I would love it if it's on a continuous basis, a full hour in a row, but maybe it's just an accumulated amount of time throughout the day, an hour full physically distant. And then you continue to build up. You're going to find, I told my wife 4 years ago, I haven't done anything other than sleeping for 23 minutes and 15 seconds in a row in a decade. And I'm serious about
it.
Yeah. And now it is so very natural for me to spend time physically distant my phone. So you are training a muscle in doing that. So number one, understand your power and authority to model a relationship you want your kids to mimic. Second one is start daily and small with time physically distant from your phone. The third one is establish sacred times and sacred places without your phone. So a sacred time could be the first 30 minutes after you wake up in the morning, no phone. Sacred time could be family dinner, whether that's 5 minutes or 50 minutes. I mean, I would encourage anybody, if you do a family dinner, just make it phone free for all of you. A sacred place could be your child's bedroom. When it's bedtime, you never bring it in. When you're tucking them in, you never bring it in. It could be my son is 15. We have a pact together that we don't take our phones in the bathroom. We just
the
funny thing, which is hilarious, right?
I bet that cuts your bathroom time in half.
Oh yeah, I did. Yeah, 10% of the time. Yeah, exactly. So it could be silly, whatever it is. Sacred times, sacred places, phone free time, and then the fourth one, and this is my favorite. This is for us to look for cues for connection. The Gottman Institute, they call these bids from those around us. So a cue could be from my wife coming in and saying, like, oh, you won't believe what happened at the gym today. Or it could be, you know, for a 2-year-old, they may say, mommy, look at me. Let's take a 14-year-old girl like my daughter. She could just walk in, her shoulders could be a little bit slumped and be like, wait a second, something's off. Or she could say, oh, you know, such and such was so mean at school today. What they're saying is, connect with me. And so if you can be an investigator and you're always looking for cues, then here's the line you say, oh, I got to hear this. Let me put my phone away. Just that line to them, it's communicating to them that they're the full focus in that moment. And when you do that, what you're communicating to their soul, it deep inside of them is saying, hey, yeah, there are 8 billion people who can reach me on my phone, theoretically. You're more important than every single one of them. So what does that do for intimacy in a marriage? What does that do for even on a date night? What if you handed your spouse your phone and said, hey, I'm with you. Hey, will you hold this? I want to be real. I want this to be a great night. What does that do for intimacy in a marriage? I think we're in an intimacy crisis, by the way, with our kids and in our spouses. But for our kids, for them to feel like I'm the focus right now, this is an amazing thing that we can all do. And all we have to do is look for it. We can look, and there it's all around us, and it's overt, and it's, you know, it's demands and requests from little kids. It's very subtle. It's a hard thing to put out a bid for connection. It's a hard thing to put out a cue because if someone doesn't pick up on it, it kind of hurts.
Mm-hmm.
And the inverse is true. When we're in the middle of a conversation with our spouse, with our kids, all it takes is one glance to kill that moment. Not just kill that moment, but kill intimacy in that moment. And for kids especially, it in their little neuroplastic brains, it signals to them like, I can't really open up to dad because he looks like a fucking dude. I can't open, that Oof. Sucks. And yeah. so it kills the intimacy in that moment and their likelihood to be intimate with you in the future. I don't want that. I want to be close with my kids. I want them to know that I'm safe and they can trust me. And the way to do that, the most tangible way literally is saying, oh, I got to hear this. Let me put my phone up real quick. It's amazing what that will do to a relationship. I'm telling you, those four things right there will change your life. Whether you ever get an RO box or not, I don't care. But if you can live those four things and live a life of notice, that'll change your relationships. And you can initiate our mission as an, our vision as an organization is to create an entire generation of intentional families. But real change happens over three generations. What if we, everybody listening here, is the initiator of the first generation of change that will pass on to our kids and then to their kids. And then we have three generations of changed relationships just by us starting this today.
I love that. I'm sure you've read, there's a habit book that talks about how if an airplane moves like 3 inches,
yeah,
it's going to end up in Seattle or down in Mexico.
Right. Yeah.
Like by the trajectory of where it goes. So like we are the airplane moving 3 inches and then our kids are going to just continue that.
Yeah.
And I thought that that was super powerful.
That's so true. It really is.
What would you say would be an, because I keep going back to this personal thing. So it's the intimacy with our partners. It's the intimacy with our kids and the intimacy or like relationship with ourself. What would you say would be like a bid that we could recognize in ourselves to like take a moment?
I would personally say it would deal. I think all of us know how our emotions manifest. So my wife loves to say sometimes, she loves to say like, she's like, oh, I'm not really emotional. I'm like, dude, you're Italian. You get mad. Like she gets mad when something's off. I get a little weepy here. I just cry a little bit. So if I'm feeling down. So recognizing when I feel real sadness, like I just feel down and mopey. Like to me, that's like, okay, that's my body. That's my emotions making a bid towards my inner self. When my wife gets mad, that's a signal to her like, okay, something else is going on here. Mm-hmm. So I think everybody knows themselves. The easiest one, I think for most people, it does manifest as anger. So if you find yourself mad at drivers, it should like the drivers around you should think, wait a second, something's off there. So, and I love that. I haven't actually thought about it in those terms, the way you're saying it is, that is your body. That is your emotions making a bid to you. Hey, pay attention to me. Mm-hmm. Pay attention to, I need you right now to pay attention to me. There's something you need to attend to. And we're not ever going to be able, it's like the oxygen mask on the airplane. You got to take care of yourself first before you can then pour yourself out to anybody else around you. I'm going to use that, Shayla. That's really good. I love the way you said that is that's us making bids and giving ourselves cues to take care of ourselves.
We're going to take a brief break to talk about Tush Baby. Who has a toddler that just wants to be held nonstop? And they always want to be up at the kitchen. They always want to be just, but then when you put them in like a carrier or something, they want to be put back down. This is very inconvenient. Tush Baby is like this thing that you see and you're like, is this a gimmick? You wrap it around your waist and then it gives them a little seat to sit on. And then you just hold them with your forearm and now you have two hands to do all the things. They're happy. And when they're not happy, you just set them back down and then you pick them back up and it's amazing. I love using this at Target. My kids are all over the place at Target, but when I use this, they just chill. They could be outward facing, inward facing. If you are in like the toddler up down phase or like that your kids want to always be held, it's fantastic. So if you're interested, go to heyshayla.com/tushbabypod, and Hey Shayla will give you a discount. Let's get back to the show. And I think we all have to think about it for ourselves. Cause I think for me, it'd be anxiety. Like when I start feeling like anxious and I need to start rage cleaning.
Yeah.
Like that's the moment where I need to be like, okay, put my phone down, maybe pick up a couple things, go like make that magical eye contact with my toddler and let's get outside. So that's, just hearing your examples, I'm like, not for me. So I feel like that's a personal thing that you need to kind of consider.
And I just hope people listen, consider this their permission to go take care of themselves. I hope that you, that you can have that kind of self-awareness enough. And that's not a weekend spa trip. It could be, that could just be like, I just got to get some time on my own. Like, I just have to have some time to breathe. I'm telling you, I got to go out and like experience the five senses outside. You know, if anybody's done those mindfulness exercises, my favorite one of doing those where you go through like smell, sight, taste, touch, sound, like what are the things that you experience around you? If you've ever done the sound one, if you just kind of quiet yourself, every time I've done that, I've heard a bird that I didn't hear before. You're going to hear a bird. I promise you. That's everybody's encouragement. But it begins with exactly what you said, recognizing, okay, I'm feeling anxious. Something feels wrong. Let me do an assessment. Let me go get quiet. Let me go process through that. Talk about your healthy self to be able to go take on what you need to take on for yourself, for you to be able to confront that anxiety. It could be big things, or for you to just to go be present with somebody else.
Totally. Okay. One final question that's not profound, but it just keeps coming up. You obviously work. You work, I would imagine, on your phone and online. So we're talking a lot about getting off, but do you have set like work hours where you are on your phone and you are on your computer?
I'm on my computer virtually all day.
Okay.
So a good example is yesterday. I just need to do some writing. So I had my laptop. I put my phone in the R. I use my RO box all the time because I still need it. I still require the environment around me to focus in on the things that I need to focus on. And so it's not, and even to the point where I found myself, I was getting really good at home. Like I was a freaking, you know, ninja at home, like present with all the family. But then I'd find myself out at a restaurant or riding in the car, and I'd find myself looking at my phone like, I thought I was getting better at this. And it's just a recognition that we're always going to need a good environment. We're always going to need something. So when my son Harrison, who I mentioned, is now, he has his driver's permit. So when he's driving, I have to remember, okay, put the phone in the glove box when he's driving so I can guide him, talk to him, kind of help him through that kind of stuff. I have found that I need this kind of environment everywhere. So to answer your question, I'm on my laptop a bunch. And the question for your phone is not, this is where, again, back to the nuance, all screen time is not bad screen time. You have to take, it's like an assessment of what are your intentions in this moment. If I'm trying to sit down and write, and if I have my phone next to me and I keep getting text or whatever it is, like that's getting in the way of my intentions in that moment. However, if I've been writing for an hour and then I go sit and I want to like catch up on some text that I missed, my intentions in that moment are catching up on text that I missed, and that's good. You know what I mean? So it all comes back to having like an awareness of what your intentions are in that moment and seeing if what you're doing aligns with that. So I think a lot of my time for me in the mornings, I'll wake up, I'll do kind of like a morning routine, like a devotion, journaling, that sort of thing. That's completely phone free throughout the day. In the work hours, when I don't need my phone, I put it away in the RO box. And then at night with family dinners, or one-on-one time with my spouse or with my kids, the phone goes away at that time as well. So you're finding your own rhythm, and it's critical to have that correct environment for it.
Totally. Awesome. This was amazing. I loved this conversation. I really appreciate you coming on and chatting with me and teaching me all the things and just kind of talking through the real application of it, but also like opening my eyes to some of the things that we can do now that are going to have like a profound effect on our kids and generations and the whole thing.
Well, what's fun is that we're all teaching each other. I think that's we don't have the generation before us that's taught us. And so we can teach each other. We can link arms and find out what's working well. And again, all through this, if anybody, there are a lot of things we can do on our phones. There are a lot of restrictions and all that kind of stuff. But if we just begin with saying, okay, my most important relationships are human relationships, and I'm not going to let this relationship with my device get in the way of those, that's when real change can happen.
I love it. All right. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Shayla.
All right. Thank you guys so much for listening. If you enjoyed it, please share with somebody you think would love. And I would be so honored if you would subscribe to the podcast and leave a comment and rating below so I can know what you guys are digging, what you want more of, just connect with you a little better. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next time.